The following is a recording of the Thomas Paine Unitarian Universalist Fellowship. We are located in Collegeville, Pennsylvania. We are also located on the web at www.tpuuf.org. Please come visit us.
If you're at all familiar with John Ronald Reuel Tolkien's The Hobbits or his adventure trilogy, The Lord of the Rings, you know that hospitality is an essential characteristic of the Hobbit culture. The Hobbits, of course, are the common folk inhabiting Middle Earth in his books. And J.R.R. Tolkien's Hobbit hero, Bilbo Baggins, in fact, offered an invitation to all visitors. If ever you are passing this way, don't wait to knock. Tea is at 4, but any of you are welcome at any time. And in that spirit of hospitality and acceptance, I welcome all of you this morning to worship with us here at the Thomas Paine Unitarian Universalist Fellowship. Whoever you are, wherever you may be on your spiritual journey, on your life's journey, whatever you must in conscience truly, responsibly believe, however you identify and express your gender, whomever you love, whoever loves you. In the immortal words of the Master of Lakefield, upon the arrival of Dwarf King Thorin Oakenshield to his fair city, I say unto you, welcome, welcome, and thrice welcome. Good morning, I'm Jerry Lazzaro. I chair the worship committee here at the Fellowship, and I'm just delighted to be here this morning to help lead us all in worship. Our Fellowship is a liberal faith community built upon shared values and principles, not upon creeds. It encourages us encourages us to respect a spectrum of beliefs about the existence and identity of a higher power. It encourages us to seek revealed truth about human existence, the universe, and the nature of divinity from many sources. Our minister is Reverend Andrew Weber, who led worship here last Sunday, and he returns to the pulpit after a brief vacation in 3 weeks. And in the interim, you're invited to attend services featuring a shared pulpit. Our services can differ a good deal from week to week, so to get a full sense of what it is that we're about, I encourage you to attend more than one service. Speaking of sources of our religious faith, we gratefully accept the knowledge and wisdom that comes from the humanist tradition and from the arts, which we do this morning as we sample insights and wisdom from the work of Oxford University professor, philologist, and writer J.R.R. Tolkien. A philologist studies languages, the relationships between them, and their historical development. So it's no wonder that one of the accomplishments in his work is the creation of new languages, like Elvish, right, for his characters to speak. Tolkien created works of fantasy intended to elevate core moral values and virtues, and to provide life lessons for those living in the real world. For him, the real world was a world healing from the death and destruction that he witnessed firsthand in World War I. I don't know if you know that he participated in combat operations as second lieutenant and signal officer for the Lancashire Fusiliers. Perhaps his personal experience of war and its devastating impact on individuals and on social systems is what inspired him to create a world of enchantment with mythical struggles between good and evil, and with tales of perilous journeys and epic battles to restore order and peace in the kingdom. One critic, writing of the obvious moral and spiritual themes in Tolkien's work, claims that Tolkien believed, quote, "the beauty of a story could testify to both transcendence and sanctity in an age of moral decadence," which we're in right now. But anyway, we're fortunate this morning to have Tolkien admirer and apostle Kevin Dooley, right, to lead worship. We welcomed Kevin and his wife Alex into our fellowship roughly 2 years ago now. Right? Kevin will guide us through Tolkien's fantasy world to recover the real treasure to be found there. Not that magical golden ring, but lessons gleaned from lives compelled by mission and purpose, infused with virtues like courage and self-sacrifice, and finding meaning and fulfillment through collective efforts and lasting friendships. In short, in fellowship. But first, as we do in our liturgy every Sunday, we gather to worship, let's light our chalice. The chalice and the flame together symbolize our free faith. They signify, among many things, our openness to the wisdom of many ages and many traditions, the warmth of fellowship, and our commitment to keep the flame of liberty and justice burning within ourselves and throughout our world. And we light our chalice this morning with words by Douglas John Traversa. In a world filled with the darkness of ignorance, let us bring the light of reason. In a world filled with the darkness of despair, may we share the light of hope. In a world filled with the darkness of hate, let us shine the light of love. And each week we also light a lamp with a prayer for a commodity that's in short supply in our world, peace. We do so not to deny the reality of all the unrest, suffering, and violence we see in our world today, but to remind ourselves that peace is what we seek, what we long for, what we must work for. Peace in our world, peace in our communities, peace in our homes, peace in our hearts. Now, as Kevin lights our peace lamp, please participate by responding with the words on the screen. May peace be with us. I think it's time to sing. Our gathering song this morning is hymn number 131, Love Will Guide Us. Please sing along with the choir and musicians of the First Unitarian Universalist Church of Baltimore. And the words are in the video we'll play. And the full score is in our gray hymnal. Copies of the hymnal are available there in the back. Following the singing of our gathering song, I'm turning the service over to Kevin Dooley, who will conduct our Moment for All Ages and deliver this morning's message.
Has tried us, hope inside us, will lead the way on the road from greed to giving. Love will guide us through the hard night. If you cannot sing like me,
dear people, my dear Bagginses and Boffins, my dear Tukes and Brandy Bucks, welcome to Thomas Paine Unitarian Universalist Fellowship. Fantasy worlds like Tolkien's Middle Earth hold a dear place in my heart. These worlds have allowed me to explore the complexities of humanity without the mundanity and constraints of the real world. Through fantasy, we pierce the veil of familiarity and begin to see the world as elves see it, miraculous and filled with grandeur. Today, I invite you to embark on a journey with me, a journey into the world of fantasy and imagination. Together, we'll rediscover our sense of wonder, step into the lives of others, and uncover lessons that might just stay with us long after the adventure ends. I'd like to start out with a moment for all ages. We don't have any little masters here today, but any little masters in spirit are welcome to join me in spirit with this. So Tolkien is celebrated for bringing fantasy creatures to life, and I'd like to first share a poem with you. This poem is called The Long List of Ents. So Ents are the shepherds of the trees, and their charge is to protect the forests from peril. This poem is written by the Ents, and it was to help them remember all of the creatures that they live alongside. Learn now the lore of living creatures. First name the four, the free peoples. Eldest of all, the elf children. Dwarf the delver, dark as his houses. Ent the earthborn, old as mountains. Man the mortal, master of horses. And hungry as hunters, the hobbit children, the laughing folk, the little people. Now, do any of you have a favorite fantasy creature?
Hobbits.
Oh, that's a good one. So what stories did you learn about hobbits from?
The Lord of the Rings. I really love how they care for the earth. They're like farming
natures. Yeah. Anybody else?
Sam.
Well, my favorite fantasy creatures are also hobbits. So I'd like to share a short video with you of why I like them so much.
Concerning hobbits. Hobbits have been living and farming in the four farthings of the Shire for many hundreds of years, quite content to ignore and be ignored by the world of the big folk. Middle-earth being, after all, full of strange creatures beyond count, hobbits must seem of little importance, being neither renowned as great warriors, nor counted among the very wise.
Frodo! Someone at the door!
In fact, it has been remarked by some that hobbits' only real passion is for food. A rather unfair observation, as we have also developed a keen interest in the brewing of ales and the smoking of pipeweed. But where our hearts truly lie is in peace and quiet and good till birth. For all hobbits share a love of things that grow. And yes, no doubt to others our ways seem quaint. But today, of all days, it is brought home to me. It is no bad thing to celebrate a simple life.
Oh. Frodo, the door! Oh, sticklebats, where is that boy?
Thank you all for the indulgence for our moment of all ages. All right, so now, next slide, please. So our message today is the echoes of repair in Middle-earth. So the Soul Matters theme for the month of November, as Reverend Andrew Weber alluded to in last week's service, is repair. This week, we're going further to explore this theme through some of the characters of Lord of the Rings. First, I'd like to give a little bit of background for those of you who may not have read or seen it in a while. So the Lord of the Rings begins in the peaceful Shire, where Frodo Baggins inherits a mysterious ring from his uncle Bilbo. The wizard, Gandalf, discovers it is the one ring forged by the Dark Lord Sauron to dominate Middle-earth. Frodo is tasked with keeping it safe and eventually destroying it in the fires of Mount Doom. Frodo and a fellowship of helpful friends set out on a perilous journey that eventually leads to an abandoned dwarven kingdom, the Mines of Moria. In the mines, Frodo learns that the previous bearer of the ring, Gollum, has secretly been following them. Gandalf explains that Gollum was corrupted by the ring. He was once a hobbit known as Sméagol, and was transformed into this creature, Gollum, through being consumed by the ring's power. This revelation unsettles Frodo as he begins to see the ring's ability to twist and destroy. Here's a reading from the Fellowship of the Ring. Frodo, what a pity Bilbo did not stab the vile creature when he had a chance. Gandalf, pity. It was pity that stayed his hand. Pity and mercy, not to strike without need. Frodo, I do not feel any pity for Gollum. He deserves death. Here, Gandalf takes the opportunity to share a lesson with Frodo. Gandalf, many that live deserve death, and some that live die deserve life. Can you give it to them? Then don't be so eager to deal out death and judgment, for even the wise cannot see all ends. The story continues with Frodo and his fellow hobbit Sam separating from the rest of the fellowship to complete the journey to Mount Doom. Along the journey, the duo are attacked by Gollum, who is trying to reclaim the ring. But Frodo and Sam manage to subdue him. Frodo recalls Gandalf's advice and shows mercy, striking an uneasy bargain with Gollum to guide them through the perilous lands ahead. Now, throughout the journey, Frodo repeatedly protects Gollum, not seeing him as just the creature he has become, but also the hobbit Smeagol he once was. Frodo views Gollum not as a being to despise, but as someone broken and corrupted by the ring's power. Later, we learn that Gollum plays a crucial role in the destruction of the ring, but his importance extends beyond that. Gollum serves as an echo of Frodo's own potential fate, a haunting reminder of what he could become if he were to give in to the ring's power. Frodo's compassion stems from a belief that Gollum is not beyond redemption, because if Gollum cannot be saved, what hope is there for Frodo? After many trials, Frodo reaches Mount Doom. At the crucial moment, at the edge of the fiery chasm, instead of casting the ring away, he succumbs to its power, claiming it as his own. But Gollum attacks, biting off Frodo's finger and reclaiming the ring. In triumph, Gollum trips and falls into the fiery chasm, destroying both himself and the ring. With its destruction, Sauron's power is shattered, and Middle-earth is saved. But Frodo was left broken. He failed. After going through his whole journey, in the end, he too was consumed by the ring's power. And it was only through the covetous actions of Gollum and dumb luck that the ring was destroyed. It's at this point that the eagles come down and rescue Frodo and Sam, and the hobbits eventually make their way back home. This is where the book and the movies diverge. So in the movies, Frodo's internal struggle is largely explained through narration, but in the book chapter, The Scouring of the Shire, we see Frodo reach back to the echoes of repair that he learns from Gollum. When the hobbits make it back to the Shire, they find that it's been taken over by one of Sauron's lackeys, the wizard Saruman. The once peaceful home is scarred by industrialization and tyranny. Oppressive rules have been put into place, and a climate of fear is created by imprisoning prominent figures and turning Shire folk into Saruman's peacekeepers. The heroes take what they have learned on their journey to win back the allegiance of the Shire hobbits. The whole scene culminates in the hobbits coming together to defeat Sauron and leaving Frodo to decide his fate. Now, after all the damage that Saruman has done, the Shire needs to be repaired. But this isn't just rebuilding houses and replanting trees. Frodo recognizing that this is also repairing the hearts of his fellow hobbits. Frodo decides to spare Saruman because he recognizes the true lasting damage that Saruman did to the Shire was to change the hearts of the hobbits. Frodo quotes, "No hobbit is ever killed another on purpose in the Shire, and it is not to begin now." By letting Saruman go, he's showing the other hobbits that even after all the harm that Saruman has inflicted in the Shire, he is not beyond repair. Frodo has learned that to see himself as repairable, he has to see others, even those who have done great harm to him, as repairable too. And through this act of clemency, he's able to take this lesson and project it to his fellow hobbits. Now, by seeing Saruman as repairable, they can all collectively recognize that the broken parts of themselves can be repaired as well. To reflect on Frodo's perilous journey, please join me in singing one of Tolkien's poems, Farewell to Hearth and Hall, set to the music of Misty Mountains, a song from the Hobbit movie.
Thank you. winds may blow and rain may fall, we must away at break of day. For over wood and mountain tall, to Rivendell, where elves yet dwell, in glades beneath the misty fell, through moor and waste, we ride in haste, and whither then we cannot tell. With foe the head behind us dread, beneath the sky shall be our bed, until at last our toil be past, our journey done, our errand sped. We must away, we ride before the break of day.
I'm really enjoying that, much like the fellowship in The Lord of the Rings, we are also a fellowship with friendship and community at its heart. We hold love and care for each other as the burning ember of our purpose. We embody the importance of care for each other every week as we set aside time for sharing the matters of our hearts. If you have a sorrow or a joy which overflows into this beloved community, I invite you to come forward and share briefly into the microphone. Those of you online can raise your virtual or physical hand and you will be unmuted to share. Please start with your name.
So we will bring this time of sharing to a close. We will sing Spirit of Life. This is going to be performed by the choir from the Unitarian Universalist Fellowship of Northfield, Minnesota, and will pop up on your screens here in just a second.
Like the hobbits, we collectively share each other's joys and sorrows, and none of us feel so alone in life because of it. A great example of this from the books is at the beginning of the trilogy, when Frodo is first embarking on his quest to destroy the ring. He plans to sneak away from home alone in secret, hoping to bear his burden alone so as to not trouble his friends. But they're on to him, and against his wishes, they figure out his plan and follow him. He is very upset to find that they refuse to let him go alone on this perilous journey. Frodo says, "It does not seem that I can trust anyone." To that, his friend Merry replies, "You can trust us to stick with you through thick and thin to the bitter end, and you can trust us to keep any secret of yours closer than you keep it yourself. But you cannot trust us to let you face trouble alone and go off without a word. We are your friends, Frodo. We are horribly afraid, but we are coming with you or following you like hounds." I think that's very sweet. And also, if you know the work, then Sam throughout the entire series is just the best character. He's very, very loyal to poor Frodo. And I hope that it is this fierce support and loyalty that we can strive to create here in our own fellowship, and that by sharing our joys and sorrows each week, we can create a community that can be relied upon in times of trouble.
Thanks, Alex. So, in closing, I'd like to share some words from The Lord of the Rings and Philosophy by Gary Bossom that I have up here. So, in here, he includes an essay called Tolkien's Six Keys to Happiness, where he explains that what Tolkien's hobbits and elves might have to teach us about the secrets of true happiness and fulfillment. So, number one, find joy in the simple things. Hobbits take pleasure in everyday delights, eating and drinking, gardening, wearing bright clothes, attending parties, exchanging gifts, and gathering with friends. Simple pleasures are favored over extravagant ones for a simple reason. They're more frequent and easier to obtain. Number two, make light of your troubles. In Two Towers, Gandalf says, "Hobbits will sit on the edge of ruin and discuss the pleasures of their tables or the small things of their fathers, grandfathers, great-grandfathers, and remoter cousins to the ninth degree, if you encourage them with undue patience. The hobbit's ability to remain cheerful and unbowed in the face of hardship and suffering is one of their most endearing qualities." Number three, get personal. One of the hobbit's most striking traits is their remarkable capacity for friendship, as Alex just discussed in Matters of the Heart. Number four, cultivate good character. In a letter, Tolkien remarks that one of his aims in Lord of the Rings was the encouragement of good morals. I think that Jerry might have mentioned that in the intro too. In Lord of the Rings, good characters are happy and bad characters are unhappy. For the most part, Tolkien's Middle Earth is a conventional fairy tale world where the good guys slay the dragon and the bad guys bite the dust. Cherish and create beauty. In Tolkien's worlds, in Tolkien's works, happy people are often described as artistic and creative. Even the rustic hobbits have long, skillful fingers and can make many useful and comely things. Tolkien is right. We need beauty in our lives. Ugliness enervates and depresses, while beauty inspires and refreshes. Finally, rediscover wonder. Tolkien calls rediscovering wonder a form of recovery, a healing of spiritual blindness. Fantasy works like Lord of the Rings have the ability to heal by contrasting the magical with the mundane and the enchanted with the familiar, helping us see the world anew through fresh eyes. Having encountered Ents this morning, we'll see forever the elms and beeches differently. The blue ocean and silver moon suddenly appear wondrous and strange, and the green earth again becomes a mighty matter of legend. Please join me in a last moment of wonder by singing Tolkien's poem In Western Lands Beneath the Sun.
Western lands beneath the sun, the flowers may rise Thanks, Kevin, for reminding us why we come here. Because as I mentioned earlier, Frank, that we believe that revealed truth is available to us through all kinds of sources, through the sciences, through the arts, through literature, through the world religions, which are not less than Christianity, or perhaps not more than, but on equal terms in terms of providing us with wisdom and guidance. In the Fellowship of the Rings, the first book of the Lord of the Rings trilogy, Galadriel, the beautiful, powerful, elfish princess with magical powers, gives Frodo a small crystal vial that glitters when she moves it, sending rays of light springing from her hand. In this vial, she says, is caught the light from Arendelle's star, set among the waters of my fountain. It will shine brighter when night is about you. May it be a light to you in dark places when all other lights go out. So though we now extinguish our chalice, we preserve within us the light of truth, the warmth of compassion, and the flame of liberty and justice. Like the light of Arendelle's star, may our UU faith, symbolized by our chalice, be a light to us and to others in dark places when all other lights seem to have gone out. Thank you. Our service is over. Please stay for announcements and for the postlude. Susan Hare, I believe, is delivering our announcements this morning.
Conversation. Thank you. And our postlude today is The Last Goodbye, words by Billy Boyd, music by Howard Shore, performed by Billy Boyd. Thank you.
I saw the light fade from the sky. On the wind I heard a sigh. As the snowflakes cover my fallen brothers, I will say this last goodbye. Night is now calling, and I must away. Over hill and under tree, through lands where never light has shone, by silver streams that run down to the sea. Under clouds, beneath the stars, over snow on winter's morn, I turn at last to paths that lead home. And oh, where the road then takes me, I cannot tell. We came all this way, but now comes the day to bid you farewell. Many places I have been, many sorrows I have seen, but I don't regret, nor will I forget all who took that road. Now for me, so ends this day. The road is now calling, and I must away. Over hill and under tree, through lands where never light is shone, by silver streams that run down to the sea. To these memories I will hold, with your blessing I will go, to turn at last to paths that lead home. And oh, where the road then takes me, I cannot tell. We came all this way, but now comes the day to bid you farewell. I bid you all a very fond farewell.